Welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast that explores the creative and curious world of work through monologues and conversations with artists, creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, and changemakers. Have you ever wondered what it takes to navigate and sustain a 42-year independent creative career? Michael E. Stern is here to share a story about desire, goal setting, perseverance, and resilience as he moves from being behind the camera to leading a team. In this conversation, he talks about who taught him what a producer does, his approach to communication and leadership, how he trusts his instincts and team, and how he meets people. I always learn from Michael, and this conversation is rich with wisdom and insight. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/559. Hey, it works, Michael. Welcome back to Getting Work to Work. As always, it is a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you say that up front because we haven't talked yet, so you may not say the same thing at the end.
Oh, nonsense. Like, I always learn something from you.
Well, you need bigger friends. What can I say?
This is true. I'm not going to argue that with you.
All righty. Well, folks, that was our conversation for today. Tune in next week when we learn how to make raisin bread.
Ooh, raisin bread. Nice. All right. With prunes to raisin bread. Let's go.
Okay.
So I went to your website and I saw your new tagline. I don't know if it's new, but it's new to me. Think like an artist, shoot like a director, edit like a storyteller. I love that.
Actually, that's been on, I appreciate that. That's been on my email signature and website for quite some time, actually. But I guess I moved it from an obscure page up to the homepage.
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
Yeah. Think like an artist, shoot like a director, edit like a storyteller. It communicates to my more straightforward and less creative clients. But it's hard to say that without being funny. But, you know, a lot of my clients, you know, aren't that creative in these areas, don't really understand what we do. And they get that. So I'm happy with that line.
Yeah. Is there one of the three that you are drawn toward more? Or are they all kind of like that Venn diagram of intersection where you're in the center of all three?
Yeah, there are three intertwined threads. Yeah, I guess Venn diagram is a good way to say that. The one doesn't exist without the other two, or if it does exist, it doesn't exist in its full capacity. You know, you need content to edit like a storyteller. You need something to do to shoot like a director. And I've always thought like an artist. They're co-equal branches of government.
Hopefully they work.
Well, mine does. I mean, you know, 42-year career, I can't complain.
That's true.
This is my 42nd year in business.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. Actually, anniversary is this week, and I hope to be successful sometime. So, I mean, at some point, aren't you supposed to retire after 30 years? That was what I read.
Well, maybe you got the watch, but you just kept working.
Well, the watch broke, and so I can't tell time. I should get it fixed.
So, you know, what's the secret to a 42-year career other than a glutton for punishment?
You know, goal setting, having a desire to be creative all the time, endlessly curious about how can I get better? How can I make this a better experience next time? How can I be more efficient next time? Where can I squeeze out more profitability next time? The next time is constantly pushing me.
Okay, you just blew my mind there. That's awesome. The next time. So the next time we talk, no, just kidding. I'll have it dialed in.
Well, you know, it's a process. It is a process. And you know, one of the difficult things that happens to a lot of folks like myself is it's very easy to become creatively irrelevant. Mm. And I'm speaking about a commercial basis. As you have clients that want to hire you, as the age gap increases, in their mind, you become more irrelevant. And my best clients are ones that are within 10 years of my age, I would say. I have some clients who love to remind me that I'm a quarter of a century older than they are. That one stings, I have to say. But I have a story for you. Ooh. about desire, mm-hmm. Goal setting, mm-hmm. perseverance, and resiliency.
Okay, I'm ready.
You're ready. 4 years ago, I embarked on a ambitious time-lapse project that was supposed to be a 3-minute time-lapse film for, at the time, was my best client. And it turned into a 24-minute documentary, almost all video.
Oh, wow.
And although there wasn't scripting or storyboard, we were sort of filming on the seat of our, by the seat of our pants. I'll send a link to it if you want to post it, but it's it was the restoration of a concrete tree, which sounds boring on its face, but when you know the history of this environmental sculpture going back last century, and how that whole all began and how it was built and missing records of who built it and how it was restored, it's kind of an interesting story. And after it was done, and this is now 2018, I delivered the film, mm-hmm. I thought, I want to be a producer. Mm. I want to stop being behind the camera in terms of camera controls and direct others, produce the film, pull a team together, and enjoy that type of work. Something I always aspired to. The beginning of my career, I named my business the Stern Photography Group. And I nice. Wanted to have people working for me. Mm-hmm. And I was absolutely clueless as to really what that involved. And I never really was able to pull it off. The occasional assistant, you know, I would have. And I did do a brief spate. Amount of, I can't even think of what the right word is. I'm a visual person, not a verbal person.
We won't judge you.
Us eyeball people have limited mouth work. Okay, that's all I can say. gosh, where was I? I lost my train of. Oh yeah, so I did do some catalog work in the early '90s, where I had teams of photographers working for me with art directors and makeup artists and costumers and all that kind of stuff. That was more catalog work, and I did just do some shooting, but and sort of the client and I sort of co-produced it. But I wanted to produce a film, and so I put the feelers out to various clients, and I had a few fits and starts. And the director of a very large trade union educational trust fund wanted me to do a film for them, get out a new marketing message, something that they hadn't done for over 4 decades.
Oh, wow.
And the person that ultimately hired me had overheard me speaking to a client at an outreach event back in the days when we could do those things in person. And he overheard me talking to a client who was at this trade show, this outreach event. And he came up to me and we started jawboning. And it took 4 years to get a project off the ground. But he said, I could tell from the moment I listened to you talking that you were the guy that was going to do this film for me. I had to find the right vehicle for you. Wow. Of course, he doesn't tell me this until like 3 weeks ago after the job's done and in the can, you know, because we were sort of reviewing how we worked together. But back in May, he wanted, you know, we went to a lunch and we talked about, you know, what his plan was for this film. And then he wanted me to produce it and, you know, do everything. And I was like, all right, I achieved my goal. And then after the lunch, I was thinking, oh, shit, I can't do this by myself. I need to get a team together. What was I thinking? I'm going to fail this guy. Oh, my God. You know, and I went through this panic phase mm-hmm. for about a day. But I realized that I had a number of people that I've known professionally over the years, teaching colleagues, people I've met through my journey early in my career, creative people, some former students who I've been watching and seeing them growing in their profession. And I realized I had the core there. I just had to pull them together. Mm. And I had the client sign a master services agreement, which is the overarching a document that guides our relationship, and then a mm-hmm. specific scope of work document that they signed that outlined the money and the budget and deposits and ownership and all that stuff.
Nice.
And as soon as they signed it, you know, money started flowing, and I put my team together. I have a camera department on this film. I hired a former student to do the Steadicam work for me because my vision was to see the camera floating in space, not just on sticks. He brought in his team. And this is a kid that I went to, that was a student of mine at Brooks, and I've been following him on Instagram, and I knew I wanted to work with him. I wanted to find some project where we could work together.
Nice.
And a former colleague of mine, teaching colleague, I hired to do all the After Effects graphics work. A friend of mine I've met 40 years ago on when I was actually an employee for a brief amount of time. He did my script for me. He did my storyboards for me. He helped me art direct. I hired another student to do my behind the scenes footage and be my BTS person and also production assistant. Mm-hmm. And I hired a voiceover artist that someone I'd been wanting to work with for a while. And I had used a recording studio on this prior film that I had mentioned earlier. So I had the recording studio set up, a voiceover artist, my production assistant, my camera department, my art department, my graphics department. So I had my team together, and I'd never done that before. And because this was a manufactured film in that there was a specific marketing message the client wanted, mm-hmm. we had a certain amount of time we had to fit it into, and all the parts were there. And the actual day of, there were 2.5 days of filming, it was really a simply, this is the scene. Here's what we need to shoot. You know, here's what the dialogue is.
Nice.
And the client did their job. They got a dozen people to appear on camera in this video. And it took a while to get a dozen people vaccinated because we wanted a set without masks as far as mm-hmm. people in front of the camera. So this video had a longer shelf life. So that was a big impediment initially. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my job as the producer, on the day of the shoot, you know, we had set 7 scenes up to film on this one long day. We actually ended up shooting 10 because my team was so efficient. Everybody was engaged. Everybody was happy to be there. I did a little stand-up shtick to keep people entertained. But you know, while my crew was unloading camera gear and lighting and all that and getting set up, I went and explained to all the people, here's what we're trying to accomplish. Here's what the storyboards look like. Everyone's going to get their, you know, screen time. And it's going to be hurry up and wait. So really appreciate, you know, your camaraderie and your cooperation. And, you know, in the conference room are, you know, some food and drink and, you know, feel free to have whatever you want. We'll bring lunch in later. And it's going to be a long day, but you know, we're going to try to make it fun for you. And every single one of them were like, no problem, brother. We're all here for you. And awesome. So everybody, it was the most pleasant, the most fun professional experience I've ever had. And like I said, 42 years, I've had a lot of jobs under my belt, but everybody, you know, many, many years ago, I had a long standing relationship with the Disney company, and Don Hahn, who's won some Academy Awards for producing, animated films, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, I think it was Lion King, Hunchback of Notre Dame. So he's been around a while. And you know, he was a real champion for me and loved to work with me when he was, when I was doing business with Disney, and he was more or less full time there. And one day I was asking him, you know, what is the role of a producer? And he said, and I've never forgotten this, he said, a producer's role is to take 600 artists who would otherwise go off in different directions and get them all going in the same direction.
Wow.
And, you know, sometimes things just go into your brain and they just stick. Mm-hmm. And it was like he opened up the top of my head and this just went right into the core of my brain. And I've never forgotten that. And here I am probably 15 years later. Well, no, 20 years later. Mm-hmm. I have this job that I'm doing and I'm thinking my goal today is to get all of these people going in the same direction. And as long as they're doing their job, I don't have to micromanage. Set them up, tell them what we're trying to do, watch them the first couple times to make sure they get it, that I'm communicating with them and that I pick competent people. And once I was assured that these people are the right people and they're doing their job and they don't need to be micromanaged, I really just sat back. I was like the pilot on the Jungle Cruise boat at Disneyland. It's on a track. It ain't never going to sink, right? I just have to make sure I stay on the rails and I'm going to get home free. And we knocked out 3 extra scenes. We had so much more footage than we had anticipated. And even the drone guy that I hired to do a sunset exteriors of the facility so we could see what it looks like as people are driving up to this training facility. This is a story about this labor union providing free training for members. So I wanted people to see from the video what the building looked like. So when they drive up to it, they can, you know, they recognize it because it's in an industrial area. Even he was so into the shot. He came, the shot that's in the video, we were, he said, hey, let's try this while we were waiting for the sun to get into the right spot. He goes, well, while we're waiting around, why don't we try this shot? And I went, okay, let's go for it. And I knew as soon as he filmed it, it was the shot.
Oh, cool.
We did shoot the pieces that we were there for because it was scripted and storyboarded, and we got that footage. But the thing that he shot, I mean, if you're it's the American flag, it's blowing in the breeze, the sun is setting, we see blue sky. You know, it's just this wonderful metaphor that tied everything up very nicely. I figured I'd pull it off. I figured I would be successful, but I didn't think it would be this easy or it would be at this high a level. Mm. You know, the message is clear. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my biggest fears was the voiceover talent. Listening to demo tapes and how does that person's voice translate into what I want them to say and how I want them to say it. With no experience in between, I had to rely on my instincts. And my art director, who's done a lot of voiceover work as far as in recording studios and directing talent, he thought it would work. So, well, that was good enough for me because I didn't have any thoughts about it. And, you know, the video really hinged on how she could carry it off. We wanted a female voice to be the narration because this is a video to market to plumbing contractors. So we wanted a female voice to get their attention, but it couldn't be too sexy and it couldn't be, it couldn't be too authoritative. It had to be that middle point where I got your attention. Now here's the message.
Yes.
And all the parts just fell. It was like putting together a jigsaw puzzle. All the parts were there. They were cut correctly. I just had to put them together in the right order. And it was from beginning to end, it was a wonderful process. As soon as the client approved the rough cut per the contract, the balance of the money was paid. I finished the cut. I sent them download permissions. Everybody's happy. It just, there wasn't one thing that didn't go right. I've never experienced that before. Yeah, you're laughing, but it's true, isn't it? I mean, to have something go so smoothly like that.
It's shocking.
It's shocking.
I love that story so much because the first thing that stands out, Michael, is this resilience and perseverance that you have when you initially start. You want to be this producer, and then fast forward 42 years later, you finally get to start doing that. I mean, how did you hold on to that dream?
Well, I always believed I wasn't ready to move into video or cinematography because I was having too much fun as a still photographer. I remember having multiple conversations with myself, mainly because no one else will talk to me. But why don't I get into film? Well, because I'm having too much fun as a still photographer. There's still things in the photography world that I wanted to accomplish, you know, that were on my bucket list. And I finally filled up that bucket list. I hit everything on that list that I wanted to do. And my desire to be behind the camera as the actual camera operator, it just dissolved. I just didn't feel the need to shoot anymore. I don't want to shoot anymore. I want someone to shoot for me. I know what I want. I believe I can communicate it, and I'm ready to take that plunge. And that's really what triggered in 2017. And it's always been a marker of my career. I decide I want to do something. I put that thought into my head. I repeat that thought. I have a little message on my computer, you know, a little post-it note reminding me, what do I want to do today? And that reinforcement and what little step. Well, if I can't contact someone about being a producer, I can at least read about being a producer or practice something in terms of editing to help me be a better storyteller. You know, something, I was doing something all the time to build up the skill set in all the areas. So I executive produced this film. I line produced the film, which means I was on set making budget decisions when necessary. I directed the film and then I edited the film. So I had four jobs.
Right.
And I was just working on those skills only. I didn't need to figure out what focal length I needed. I didn't need to figure out what lighting ratio I needed. I didn't have to futz with the After Effects graphics. I didn't have to write the script or the story. But, you know, I farmed that out to people who are far better at it than I. And it was a long, long time coming. But I will say that the first opportunity that this client gave me, I pitched one of the local unions. We got into the development stage and we were ready to sign contracts. And there was some political upheaval within the local, and that person who was in charge was no longer there. And so that one died. And then we went, I got turned on by the guy who ultimately hired me, the director of this trust fund, this educational trust fund. He sent me to another local, and we got to the point where we had scripts and storyboards approved. We got deposit money in, we were ready to start filming, and then COVID hit. And February of this year, that person called me back and asked me if I was still in business. And I said, well, you know, legitimate question, right?
Great question.
Of course. Yeah, yeah. Great question. Especially if you're self-employed and difficult like I am. I'm not difficult, really. What's your name again? What's your name? That's right. You're Chris. That's right.
That's right. Well, I was going to say that you have a vision, but there you go. I mean, you know
I do.
What you want.
I know what I want. And the client, he couldn't determine if it was the right thing to do, if the script was right. And I had several conversations with him. The script is hitting the points you want to talk about. This bigger idea that you have, we can attack that, but you want to make this an introductory message to get people interested. And then you bring in the big guns, but you can't just blast them right away. You have to go in steps. And I could not convince him that that was an appropriate approach. And that one never went anywhere. So it took two times. This was the third time's a charm, right? I guess that cliche is true. And it came through. And I am so grateful to have been given the opportunity. And I think I broke my arm patting myself on the back as I pulled it off.
Well, let me humble you a little bit then.
Please do.
So there's that moment where you land the project, but then you have that day of doubt. Like what's going through your head in that moment?
Well, when you say day of doubt, can you elaborate a little bit?
Yeah, kind of right at the beginning there where you're like, I don't know if I can do this.
I think if I had been less experienced or younger, I probably would have flipped out. Or my arrogance would have driven me right into a wall. But I figured one way or the other, I was going to get it done because I've done thousands and thousands of jobs, not anything like this.
Right.
But I went to my reserves and figured, you got this. You just, you know, Dave is going to come on board to do your script and your storyboards and your creative. You know, you got that down. Voiceover. We'll have to get it. We know we want a female talent, and we will make that work. Jeff, I want Jeff to do the camera work. He's done documentaries. He's done music videos. He's done commercials. I know he's solid on the camera. And Ben, I used to work with him at a community college where we both taught. He's an After Effects genius. I worked with him on small little things, so I know that I was going to get him, no problem. Production assistant was a bottleneck. I called up one student and told her what the job was, and she is unemployed, and she had contacted me several times about, you know, if you have any work, I'd love to do it kind of thing. And so I call her up and explain the job, and she goes, well, let me know when you get closer and I'll have to think about it. Well, okay, thank you. That one and done. I went to somebody else.
Right.
Who when I called her up, she's like, "Oh, I can't believe you're really?" You know, and when I paid her, you know, I want to work with underrepresented people. So, women and people of color were one of my hiring goals. And this woman, she's an immigrant from Armenia, or I guess she's Armenian, maybe she's Iranian. Now I'm not sure, but she came here to this country for a better life, and she wanted to be a photographer, and she was working in a law office, you know, back room kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But she took a beginning photography class with me several years ago. So I remembered her, and she has a great eye, and she's just a very nice person. And she did a wonderful job. She got some of the best pictures of me, and I'm not the easiest person to photograph. And she killed it. I was so happy to have nice, good pictures of me on the job. I will cherish these forever. And when I paid her, this is my first professional job. I can't believe I'm actually getting paid. This is great. And I was so happy to be that person for her. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I was her first professional gig. I just assumed she had been working here and there. Mm-hmm. You know, I trusted her completely. When I pulled the people in, told them what I wanted from them, we all negotiated rates. Everybody was happy with the money they got. As soon as I got deposit money from the client, they got their deposit money. You know, I don't mess with people like that. As soon as their job was done, they got the rest of their money. You know, I treated everybody right. And, yeah. And I figured, I know how I want to be treated. I'm going to treat them. And I can't worry about whether or not they're going to perform until they don't perform when I need them. And then I have to deal with that. So I didn't make my younger self might've made myself crazy anticipating problems. And I figured if my camera guy failed, I'd step in there, no problem. If the graphics guy failed, I'd get in there, no problem. Mm-hmm. If I didn't get what I wanted from the drone guy, I'd get somebody else, no problem. I know Dave wasn't going to fail me because he and I have been down too many roads before from many, many years ago. So I knew he was solid on all the script material and the storyboards, you know, super, super good guy. I figured I would just have to be methodical. Mm-hmm. I put together a producer's book, which, you know, what needs to be done, what has been done, what has to be done the day of. It had the storyboards in there, and I could just tick off when we got the shots done, and it kept me on track. If I hadn't built that structure, that producer's book, which is not an uncommon thing, I had it with me. I just had to rely on the book. And if there was a question, what's in the book? Have you done this already? Yeah, we did this on this date. You know, what's been completed? What are we doing today? What comes next? It was very methodical and process oriented, but within that structure, there was a lot of creativity that was allowed to flourish within that structure because the parameters were so well defined.
Wow. There's so much in there that you just shared too. That's like, we can all learn from too.
Well, God damn it. That's the point.
Right. Okay. First, those behind the scenes photos of you are amazing. So the fact that that was her first professionally paid job, kudos to her, because she captured you in a way that is like, I get the idea that it's a fun set, you're having fun, but you're also in charge and making sure that this happens.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. She captured the flavor of it. Mm-hmm. And I the big picture for me, Chris, is if I get another opportunity to produce a film, I have a team that I can call.
Yeah.
And they'll all say yes, because everybody had a good time. Mm-hmm. And respect, mutual admiration, don't mess with the money, let people do what they do best, guide them, and be clear what your goals are. Otherwise, just let them deliver when they say they're going to deliver it. And if they don't, then you have to intervene, but in a nice way. Be respectful of these people. You hired them for a reason. Get the hell out of the way and let them do their job.
How did you get?
I know people stop talking when they get around me. I know it's pretty awesome.
I totally flubbed the question that I had. It was great. The question that I have is about ego, though, because did it take you 42 years to learn how to put your ego aside so that people could do their job?
Dude, I'm slow, but not that slow.
Well, I'm just thinking for myself, because it might take me 42 years to get my ego out of the way.
Well, you know, I tell you the truth, in all honest seriousness, going back to that earlier comment, I I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish as a still photographer. I really can't pinpoint what particular job it was, but I got to the point where I proved to myself that I'm a competent and above average photographer. It took me a long time to accept that I'm good at this. And once I allowed that statement to get into my head, it like a lot of defensive fell by the wayside. Mm-hmm. My ego was satisfied that I can shoot. So what's the next thing I want to do? I want to work with others and direct them to a common goal. And I remember I did a job, I guess it was in February. It was a night shoot for a regular client. And he said that I was a super photographer and a good person. And this is someone who's not very emotive at all. You know, I was thanking him for letting me come onto his job site for the evening and take the pictures I wanted to take. And that was his comment. And that really stuck with me, that, you know, allow yourself that you are good and drop that ego thing into a more manageable realm. Although it's never really been out of control for about 20 years. A wife is good for that. Ego too big, get married. It'll come down. In a good way.
Yes.
So it was easy. I was satisfied that I know what I'm doing. And now the goal was, can I communicate my vision to this creative team?
Yeah.
And when we did the site survey, so my art director, scriptwriter guy came out, David, and my camera guy, Jeff, came out to the location. Mm-hmm. We walked through it. I told him what the goal was. Jeff came up with some camera ideas and camera positions and, you know, let's move the camera. Let's figure out what the motivation is. You know, he wanted to put one light in every shot to throw an edge on the background, to either throw light in the background or an edge on the subject to separate them from the background. Exactly what I would have done.
Nice.
When we talked about focal lengths and perspective and depth of field, he was suggesting things as if I was going to do it. I mean, it's exactly what was in my head. And so that totally satisfied me that this kid has got it.
Yeah.
And he understands what I'm trying to do. And it was a great relief, because of course the visual for me was important because that's my home turf. Mm-hmm. And I knew Dave was going to do an excellent job. In fact, the script got approved on the first pass.
Wow.
There was a couple, word changes here and there.
Right.
But seeing my team at the various stages of the work helped me understand that don't screw this up, Stern. Mm-hmm. This is a bona fide for you. Mm-hmm. You got something you wanted. You got the money you wanted. Mm-hmm. You got the trust you wanted. You got the team you wanted. Don't screw this up by getting into their stuff too much. Mm-hmm. You hired them for a reason, step back. That was easy to do because I didn't feel the need to prove myself. I've proven things to myself. This is going to be fun. This is something I wanted to do. I mean, I had a goal and I was going to succeed, but I didn't have that, this is going to put me on the map and make my career, whatever. I wasn't worried about success or failure. I was worried about, can everybody just get along and let's get this done today?
Yeah.
That's my goal. Have fun. Be clear what you want. Make sure it gets done if people are struggling. Otherwise, get a cup of coffee.
One of the things that I'm curious about is how you approached building a team. Because I think when you're a one-man band like you have been, it can be challenging to approach building a team.
Yes.
So you mentioned how you did it. You know, you remembered people from the classes you were teaching, but how do you recommend people connect to others and start building that team mentality?
Well, you got to go to places where people are. You have to volunteer. Mm-hmm. I live in a neighborhood that's a bunch of historical houses, and every year we have a block party for everybody in the neighborhood association. Mm-hmm. You talk to people, you meet people, you share your stories. I volunteered for the city of Pasadena here for about 10 years. You meet people there. You know, for me, teaching was also a mechanism for meeting people. Mm-hmm. Going to alumni events where I went to college at Art Center, being active on social media, you know, alumni groups, photography groups, spending time, you know, one of my hobbies, one of my pastimes is scrolling through Twitter. I find it entertaining and offensive and horrendous all at the same time. but sometimes you meet people there.
Yeah.
And I read a lot of newsletters. I'm active on LinkedIn. And so there are some film editors I'm aware of on LinkedIn. And you know, the fella that shot that outstanding drone footage for me mm-hmm. used to be a client. And he lost his job several years ago, moved out of state, came back after a few years, and now he does drone work. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up hiring him. I've known that he was one of the best clients I ever had in terms of he called when he needed something. He didn't mess with the money. He was good on the budgets. He was easy to work with. He communicated. And so those skills don't go away just because you went from a client to a vendor. That's right. Still his core person. And working with him was, you know, because I knew him from this other thing and now he's a vendor. So, you know, as you go through life, right, you just accumulate people. I mean, honestly, I'm more of an introvert. Mm-hmm. Being around a lot of people exhausts me. But at the same time, I like to volunteer because I don't consider myself a generous person. Mm-hmm. So giving my time helps me give back and you meet people. Mm-hmm. But it's a process and you have to be somewhat strategic. You know, I don't go to outreach events, you know, for people that run fast food franchises. I go to outreach events that are either put on by my industry, the sound industry, the video industry, the photography industry, the education industry, the construction industry. You know, I go to where the people that I would like to meet are most likely to congregate. And, you know, a lot of misfires, mm-hmm. it ain't straightforward and it ain't quick.
Right.
And you also have to be a pretty good discerner of people.
Yeah.
If you don't have a good bullshit meter, you can get crunched. Mm.
That's so good, Michael. I'm shocked. I pegged you for an extrovert.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, I am so happy just to be stuck in my house. Hmm. I mean, I have a big yard. I like gardening. I don't mind being stuck on my property. I don't mind hanging out here. Hmm. My wife likes to go out. I mean, we actually took a trip in the beginning of August, which I haven't done for 7 years. So that was fun to do. Mm-hmm. And she's out and about a lot. And I'll hold down the fort and I do venture forth. I mean, I did get up for a day like that. The shooting, you know, the filming day was awesome, but I was, took me 2 days to recover.
Yeah.
You know, it could have been the buildup of the stress from the job and the letdown. But yeah, I would peg myself an introvert. Maybe I'm a hybrid.
Yeah. Ambivert.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Wow. Another label. Love it. Yeah.
You know, and I also love what you said about refining your bullshit meter, because I mean, how do you do that?
Oh, you get burned enough times, you make notes.
For the risk averse people out there who
you're afraid
to get burned.
You're going to get burned. The question is, do you have enough ointment to calm down the damage? You're going to get hurt. You're going to get burned. You're going to get taken advantage of, and you can't let the fear of that stop you, because through that process comes growth and personal strength and a way to do it better next time. Mm-hmm. You know, my son is going to be 22 this year and he's very risk averse. Mm-hmm. It's like, you shouldn't be that risk averse until you're 70. You got to go for it, son. It's not failure. It's, you know, failure is not a bad thing. It's how you handle it that matters.
Right.
And he just would rather not have any blemishes on his record. Mm-hmm. I hate to tell him, your record's already blemished.
Right.
You know, and I think the mark of a self-employed person you go for it. I mean, you've had your ups and downs. We all have.
Yeah. And I think if I'm hearing you correctly in reflecting on my own journey, it's the times where I finally got past that feeling that things needed to be perfect and just kind of allowing yourself to respond to things as they're unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the magic, I think, happens, as opposed to trying to perfect everything in the front end. And then when things happen, it's harder to respond in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're like, but this didn't line up with what my vision was, as opposed to, well, you've got a plan, shit might happen. Okay, how are you going to respond?
Right. Yeah, you don't plan too much. Put in a good structure, a good foundation. Here's what we're trying to accomplish. Here's what I want to do. Here are all the tools in place. And now let's go for it and have enough internal fortitude and self-confidence that if it starts to go off the rails, you'll know how to gently guide it back on.
Right.
You know, don't ignore the problems, be sensitive to them and push them back where it's like what Don Hahn said to me earlier, get 600 people who would otherwise go in off in different directions going in the same direction.
Yeah.
You do have to monitor. You do have to pay attention and things are not always going to go the way you want.
Right.
So what do you do? What's plan B? What's plan C? And deal with it as it comes up. And, you know, don't have to freak out.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be a diva or a devo. I found out that the male version is called devo.
I did not know that.
I looked it up because I put that in a blog post and I thought, so what's the gender for male diva?
Huh.
Devo. Huh. Who knew?
Maybe the band Devo knew.
Well, I'm thinking there's got to be a connection there.
Exactly.
But, you know, I've been on sets where directors, I started out as a unit photographer on commercials and movie sets. Directors yelling, threatening, just being dicks. And the people who are being yelled at, you know, privately say terrible things about that person.
Yeah.
Which means that they're distracted from their goal of what they're supposed to be doing because they're so annoyed and angry and embarrassed and humiliated or whatever about how they were just talked to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's stupid. Yell at them after they've done their work, not before. I want it to be a good product. I want people to have enjoyed being on my set, and I want people to remember that was a good experience.
Yeah.
Not that I'm trying to, you know, the self-esteem movement in the 80s, everyone feels good about themselves. You know, it's not that.
No, it's not
that. You know, if you're not doing your job, you will hear from me. I'll be nice about it, but you will hear from me.
Right.
But it's nice to be in a spot where I'm not grinding my teeth all the time. And I've achieved a certain plateau. And if I can do more of these films, if I can do more producing, I'd love it. I do have a still shoot set up this week.
Nice.
So it's not like I've given up photography.
Right.
But and actually, tell you the truth, I tried to talk this person out of hiring me. I wanted to refer them to another student of mine who is going great guns here in LA as a portrait headshot photographer. He's really, really good. And I wanted to hand her off to him, because I thought he would be a better fit, closer in age and what have you. And this woman's boyfriend, he and I go back 30 years. So I guess he's talked me up enough, she wouldn't hear of it, you know, and she sent me money. So, okay, yay me.
Well, there's something powerful in that. It's not a rejection, but it's just like, you know, there's something to be said about turning things down to, I guess, elevate the desire for someone.
I've heard that before, and I was always afraid to do that because if you say no and they go, okay, we'll go somewhere else.
Right.
That has happened in the past. And I never really meant it in the past. And they took me up on it. And here, I actually meant it, and she refused.
So do you think that's the secret?
Well, I think that the stars are lining up for Michael E. Stern finally. That's what I think.
Nice.
And I'm grateful. You know, I'm having a great time right now. You know, work is fulfilling. You know, finances are decent. Mm-hmm. You know, I got a rescue pup I just totally love from head to tail. You know, it's just wonderful.
Yeah.
And I'm bowling. I'm going to a tournament in 2 weeks.
What's your average?
My average right now is 183.
Nice.
It's not bad. It's improving. I actually had the finger inserts and my grip replaced. I didn't know that old dried cracked ones were causing a lot of problems for me. I even bought myself new bowling shoes and a bowling bag. Woohoo! I'm living. Nice. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I just don't do those. You know, that's the other thing that is probably worth mentioning. Mm-hmm. I've denied so much for myself for years. Take care of the mortgage, utilities, groceries, keep the son in school, you know, keep the family intact, you know, put money away for a rainy day, you know, delayed gratification, you know, all those things I did for a long, long, long time. Mm-hmm. And now I'm spending some of it on me. I'm enjoying turning some of that generosity back on myself. I've earned it. You deserve it. Why not? Life is too short. A lot of people have passed away that I know the last year. Mm-hmm. Some really good people that were unexpected. Mm-hmm. And what am I waiting for? And treat yourself right. Treat yourself better. It's a good spot to be in.
Yeah. Love it. Well, Michael, what's you've shared so many great things today. What's one takeaway you would want listeners to really hear you saying?
Think like an artist, shoot like a director, edit like a storyteller. One thing to take away: be good to yourself, be kind to yourself, know that you don't know everything, and learn and put yourself out there. That's where the good stuff comes from. Consistent effort in those areas and good things will happen to you.
Wonderful. Well, Michael, as always, it's a pleasure to talk with you and to learn from you and to take in your experiences in a way that resonate with where I'm at and what I'm wanting to do. So thank you.
Well, Chris, you're welcome. You're one of my favorite people.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. No, seriously. And I'm going to tell the other person that later today.
Perfect.
No. Yeah. Well, yeah. Thank you. And I'm, you know, I hope that there is some guidance and help within what I say. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing a big thing too. You're constantly working away at your stuff. And I'm impressed with how persistent you are and how resilient you've been over the years.
Thank you.
So good for you. And I expect great things to happen for you on a bigger plane than they have. I can't imagine it wouldn't happen.
Be sure to head to gwtw.co/559 to see the links to Michael's videos that he mentioned in this interview, as well as a link to his website. It really is a good resource, not only for photographers, but filmmakers as well. And let's be honest, all creative entrepreneurs who really want a different view of what it takes to run a creative business. Michael has a lot of wisdom to offer, and I encourage you to reach out to him and ask questions, because that's something that he has done for me. He's always there to pick up the phone and just talk, and I really appreciate it. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.